Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie.
Yeah.
So you've been working with a new intern, Sherrod. How's that going?
Well, he decided on one of our earlier shows today. Seemed like he enjoyed it.
You think he's going to make it?
I think he'll make it.
All right. You got a lot of work. You're his mentor.
Okay.
Mentoring's important.
It is. Yes, I agree.
All right. You excited about this show?
I'm always excited.
This is the last show of the day.
It is.
And you're going to go back and keep moving forward. Things happen today. You release the show or tomorrow?
Yeah, I release a show every Wednesday.
All right.
Release that.
Who was today's show?
She is a former athlete, and she founded a church with her husband in Savannah, Georgia.
And so, what athlete? What specialty?
She actually played like a whole bunch of different sports. She didn't really specialize. She was just kind of.
But
played
it
them
still
all.
Fit the bill.
It still fit the bill.
Keep moving forward is about interviewing athletes.
Yep, former and current professional collegiate athletes who successfully transitioned out of the world of athletics and into the real world.
And then the show specifically talks about that transition.
It does. Yeah.
And you've been doing this for how long?
2 years now.
All right. And that was our commercial.
Yeah.
This show is brought to you by Keep Moving
Thanks
Forward.
Thanks for that plug. That was good.
All right. Well, today's guest is Mr. David Geller, and he is with Join Advisors. Welcome, David.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about Join Advisors? How are you serving folks?
Join is a behavioral wealth management firm. So that's something most people really haven't heard about. So we're at the intersection of the wisdom of behavioral science and a traditional wealth management firm.
So what is behavioral science?
So we are all humans. The financial industry.
Yes. That's your specialty is humans.
That's our specialty is humans.
Okay, that's good.
The challenge is the financial industry treats people like robots. They assume everybody's rational. They assume we don't have emotions. That's just not true. So we bring the wisdom of behavioral science to help people connect with their own wisdom so they make better choices. So what that means is things like money messages. So we all get these messages growing up about money. We get them from our parents. We get them from our culture. We kind of believe them and they become part of our subconscious.
Like what's an example of a faulty money belief that a lot of people have?
Well, each belief isn't faulty.
So we're not judging.
That's right. So a simple example might be some people were raised always buy a new car. Because you don't want to buy someone else's problems. Other people are raised never buy a new car. Always buy a used car because you lose thousands of values the moment you drive it off the lot. So our approach is to be aware of these money messages, to help people identify the cost and the benefits of each money message, and then to figure out whether their childhood message aligns with their current values. Because if your childhood message and your current values don't align, you end up making choices that down the road you say, what was I doing? Why did I do that?
So you find that the upbringing really influences their whole life?
Yeah, these money message impact our whole life and we don't think about them. We just think they're true. They never enter our mind. So we might have a message of you're supposed to work really hard and earn a lot of money and all that matters at work is how much money you earn so you can save enough and you can retire early. And that's a fairly common message. A lot of people were raised, go to work. It doesn't matter whether you like it, earn a lot of money so you can quit and retire. It's got some benefits. People go to work, they work hard. They often are very financially successful. They save a lot of money and it's got some big downsides. They have a lot of stress. They often get sick. They don't have great relationships.
Right.
And so again, we would be listening for that message. We would help people figure out the cost and the benefits. They would tell us the cost and the benefits and we would then give them an opportunity to reframe the message. So someone might say, you know, I think hard work's important, but I also think my family's important and I think doing something I love's important. So I'd rather have a job that pays me a little less, a job that gives me more time to do things I love to do, both at work and at home, and I'm willing to work a little bit longer.
Now, in the studio, a while ago, we interviewed somebody from a luxury car brand.
Yeah.
And they said, and this struck me as I couldn't believe it, but the most people lease luxury cars and they don't necessarily can afford them. Like it was like an out of whack percentage of the people who really had the wealth that you would think could afford a car of that cost. Right. But the reality was that the vast majority of people who had this luxury car brand were people that really couldn't afford it, but they just wanted the appearance that they could.
Right.
Do you see that?
So, yeah. So, you know, so that's probably back to some childhood message. One of the messages people get is fake it until you make it.
Right.
So that would certainly tell you to lease a car you can't afford because the belief is other people are going to do business.
Right.
With
somebody
with
who has that type of
right,
car.
That someone has that car that they'll view you as successful and you'll be more likely to be hired. And there's probably some truth in that. There are probably people who make those types of choices. Again, tremendous financial stress involved.
Right.
The other part is, though, that in many cases, people can probably technically afford the car. They would just have to make significant lifestyle adjustments elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And most of us don't want to live in a smaller home to drive a nicer car.
But some people would.
But some people would. And right. and that's okay.
Right.
And that's okay.
So now it sounds like your practice, you're not judging any choice.
That's
right.
You're
just trying to help the person make the best choice for them.
Exactly. And one of our core beliefs is the only person who knows the right answer for you is you. We can't tell you the right answer for you.
Right.
We can give you a process that helps you figure out these money messages, that helps you figure out what's most essential for you. We can give you context. If you choose the high-end luxury car, you won't be able to eat out for dinner very often.
There's
a consequence. So we can give you context. Mm-hmm. We can develop investment portfolios designed to give you the best chance to live the life you want. But ultimately, you have to decide what is best for you. We believe with our process, you will make better choices, right? Because you'll have better clarity about the things that really matter. And we build our lives one choice at a time so better choices evolve to a better life.
So now when a person is working with your firm, it sounds like this is a non-traditional wealth management conversation you're having opposed to, hey, you're going to get this return or hey, you need more of this and less of that. You're not into this kind of transactionally minded relationship where you're just looking at, well, the market's up, so I'm smart today, and the market's down, so you know I'm not smart.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be clear. We think outstanding money management's really important, and
right.
we are really good at it. And I will compete against anybody in the entire country. But ultimately, you know, the day we die, you know, so at some point all of us die. I know this is bad news for many,
right.
but it is true. We're all going to die. And when we die, we're not going to take the money with us.
Right.
Right. And so I want you to imagine that you had died last week and you're watching your funeral from heaven and the church or the synagogue or the mosque is overflowing with people. And the priest or the minister gets up and says, you know, thank you for coming. The family is so appreciative of this great support. What we want you to remember about the dearly departed is he beat the S&P 500 by right. 3 percentage points a year. He right. died in the top 2% of financial net worth. Have a nice day. Thank you for
That's
coming.
Right.
right? No one wants that. So the point is we have wealth and our wealth's about much more than our money, but money's part of it. We have wealth to use it to build a more meaningful and more joyful life. That's the point of having wealth. So a wealth manager's job should be to help their clients use their wealth to build those more meaningful, joyful lives while doing everything they can to make sure you don't run out of money before you run out of breath, because nobody wants to run out of money before they run out of breath.
And I'm sure that that's kind of at the heart of a lot of people's fear, right? Is this running out of money.
That's right.
I don't want to be a burden. I don't want that.
I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to be old and poor. And so it's the core of people's fear. And so the way this works is, so I've been doing this a long time. And so, you know, I started doing this 30 years ago and I would have clients and they would say, when I get to $2 million, I'll feel secure.
Right.
I know I'll have enough money. Then they got to $2 million.
When I get to $4 million.
Got to $4 million. Then they got to $4 million.
Right.
When I get to $8 million. And the game keeps going
right.
on. And so it's impossible to use your wealth to build a great life if you are always fearful.
And the target moves.
And the target moves. And so the reason that works, the reason the target moves, the reason people are still fearful is the part of your brain that is generating the fear. It's called the limbic part of your brain. The emotional part is more powerful than the rational part of your brain. And the limbic part of your brain doesn't speak math. So when you're fearful,
it speaks emotion.
It speaks emotion. It speaks pictures. It speaks visuals, but it doesn't speak math. So when you're fearful and your financial advisor shows you a financial projection saying you're going to be okay, it's helpful for about 30 seconds, right? But because your emotional part of your brain doesn't speak math, doesn't do much good. Right. And we all know this. We know you can't logic your way out of an emotional issue. Right. So if you want to feel secure, right, then you have to have an advisor who's going to bring emotional-based tools to help you go from being fearful to being centered.
But I understand the fear. I have fear.
We all have fear.
So no matter how much money I have, in the back of my head is like, well, remember 2008?
Exactly.
So whatever. So I got it. Right. Whatever I got, I got to think. Like tomorrow, I might have half of what I have.
Okay, so there's really two parts to this. The first kind of logical part, which again is not going to address your fear, is you need to develop a portfolio that's designed to allow you to survive during 2008. You have to know the logical part of your brain does need to understand, right, what's going to happen in 2008. Why will I be okay? And the good news is the markets have big drops like they do in 2008, but so far the markets always come back. Right. So if you go out long enough, if you can hold on long enough, you're going to be okay. And you can design portfolios to do that. But the second part, this fearful part is when you get fearful is you got to think about what's going to really make me feel secure. And we think there's three steps, emotional steps to help people feel secure.
I need some of that guy's millions, right?
Well, so the first part is some money. You have to have some money. Okay. If you have no money, it's hard to feel financially secure. You got to have some money.
But that number, there isn't a number.
There isn't a number because we keep raising the number.
Okay.
The second part is until you get to be where you can't work anymore, the thought that if worse came to worse, you could earn more money gives a lot of people a feeling of financial security.
So there's comfort there.
There's comfort there. And the third and the most important part is I may not want to, but if things really got tough, I could be happy living on less. That is the ultimate source of financial security. That the true source of my happiness, my closest relationships, the things I love to do, helping other people, those things don't cost a lot of money. And that if things really got tough, I could be happy, I could be okay living on less.
But that, I mean, people give lip service to that all day long. How do you get them to really kind of believe that?
So we have one of our signature exercises called the life priorities exercise. So one of the challenges we have in America is we have this belief that the more money we have, the more we can literally do it all or literally have it all. That is not true. That is not true. It's not true because we each get 168 hours a week, right? We don't know how many weeks we have left, right? And so time is always our most precious resource. So if you want to build a better life, you're going to start by having to identify the things that matter most to you, right? And so we have an exercise called life priorities where we help people identify the top 3 to 5 things. When we then take those top 3 to 5 things, they're almost always things like relationship with my spouse or pursuing my purpose,
right,
or maybe having a nice lifestyle, a comfortable lifestyle, but not having a luxury lifestyle. So when we get to the part of could you be happy on less, we go back to the life priorities and we say, you know, if you lived on less, could you still have a good relationship with your spouse? And they say yes. And if you lived on less, could you still enjoy playing chess or could you still enjoy golfing or could you still enjoy helping out at the local nonprofit? And they say sure. And all of a sudden, they start to realize
it. But it sounds like you're trying to attack this emotional side where it's subjective and the people are, it's kind of maybe their better self where they say things like, oh, my family's the most important thing. And they say those things because that's, I don't know how much of it is true or it's they would like other people to think it's true. And then the reality of it is, I know people that say, oh, my family is the most important thing. Oh, but I got to work later. I got to take a client out and I'm going to miss my kids, you know, whatever. But they say, you know,
their family's most important.
Or they say, you know what, my church or synagogue is it's really at the heart of me. That's where I feel the most centered, but I never go. You know, like there's a lot of that kind of rationalization that goes around. And it sounds like a lot of your work is you're really trying, sincerely trying to get to their core of their, their goodness.
So I think that, and the research supports me that when people say their family matters most and relationships matter most, the research is overwhelmingly that's true, right? We are social animals.
Even though their behavior isn't?
Right, even though their behavior isn't. So why isn't their behavior aligned? So one of the things we often will do with people is what we call the checkbook and the calendar test. And we say to them, you know, let's assume that for that we had a detailed accounting of how you spent every minute and how you spent every dollar over the past 12 months. And let's assume we gave that information to a Ernst & Young CPA, and they spend a week looking at it.
So they're auditing
you. At the end of the week. Right, right.
They're auditing
you. Exactly. Yeah. At the end of the week, we're going to walk into the accountant's office and say, what are the three most important things to this person?
Right.
And they're going to answer based on how you spent your time and how you spent your money. And then we go through this exercise and we go, is how you're spending your time and money versus...
How you think or
Between the things that you say are most important, are those aligned?
Right.
And most people say, not so much.
Right.
Not so much.
They're incongruent.
So the answer is, why not so much? And the reason, I believe, in many cases, is we live in a very money-centric culture, right? When you say to people, this person's successful, what we mean is they're earning or have a lot of money. Right? They may be a great teacher, but we rarely say they're really successful. Mm-hmm. When you get to the end of the year and people say, how was your year? What they're asking is, did you earn a lot of money?
Right.
Well, how'd you do?
So,
right.
Okay. I understand you're in the wealth business. So that's how you hear that. Is that true? Like, is that true? Like for me, I don't know, maybe I'm hypnotized, but I look at my success more on the impact I'm having on the planet than I am in the bank.
So credit to you, and there are others like you, but our culture doesn't really support you. We don't have the Forbes 400 for the 400 Americans who made the biggest impact helping others.
Right. So when you're saying culture, you're saying society has a lot of information out there that celebrates people for maybe things that aren't the goodness, that it's more materialistic.
That's right. That's right. Our ads do it.
Right.
Our media does it. At some level, the ultra wealthy are American royalty.
Right.
At
they're some the level. Heroes. Of
they're the heroes.
Right.
Right. But the problem is the things that make for a great life are not bought with money. Money can help you get them.
Right.
And I can talk about that. But the things that make for a great life are not bought with money. But because we have this money-centric culture and because we are social beings and we're influenced by the culture we live in, by the society we live in, people say, yes, I care about my family and all, but I need to be successful. I need to go earn a lot of money because A, I'm fearful I won't have enough. And B, I want to be a success. I want other people to think of me as someone who's strong and powerful and secure. And so I'm going to spend a lot of time doing that, even though it's distracting me from what matters most. We help people unpack those messages. We give them a supportive environment to be in so they can start to think about making choices that are more aligned with their values.
And aligned and congruent with their values.
That's right. Aligned and congruent with their values.
So that when they say that my family is most important, when they do the calendar test and the money test,
it's going to be better.
It'll be more...
that's right.
It'll say the same thing.
That's right.
Instead of be out of whack.
That's right. And I will say it's always about incremental progress. So the guy who's working 70 hours a week, we kind of work with him. He's not going to 25 hours a week next week. It's incremental progress. But as long as people are making incremental progress, because that's how life is. Everything's done in incremental progress.
Right.
Then it's good. We're making progress.
Okay, so now this type of strategy from a wealth management firm to really get, I mean, you are, and now you're almost part psychologist in this. Because
we have
this
a big...
This is no longer... Oh, yeah, I have a high risk tolerance.
We're way beyond that.
Right.
That's right.
So that attracts a different type of client.
That's right.
So now I'm a big Seth Godin fan, Jay.
Okay,
so,
yeah, me too.
So Seth Godin and I participated in the Alt-MBA program. I'm all kind of all in okay. Seth Godin. So he believes in tribes.
Yeah.
So the tribe of joint advisors have to be people who believe what you believe. Right?
That's right. That's right.
Not selling to the world.
I am not selling to the world. I'm selling for people who believe what I believe.
Right. So if they don't believe that it's important to be congruent with my wealth goals and my personal goals,
that's
probably not a good fit. If you want the highest returns and I don't care by any means necessary, I don't want to talk to you, that's not a client for you.
That's right. I was with a very big prospect 2 weeks ago. And at one point I said, very big prospect. At one point I said to him, look, if all you care about is how much money your portfolio is going to earn, that's all you care about, do not hire us. You can get quality portfolio management with other firms for less than join charges. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, we are fabulous at managing money. I will match us against anybody, but you are correct. What we are offering is the kind of integration of this wisdom of behavioral science, money messages, the life priorities, expanding the definition of wealth in conjunction with wealth context, right? With wealth management, context, option A versus option B, how do you save on taxes? How do you transfer assets? And then in conjunction with that, with great investment management. And the magic is at the intersection of those three core competencies. That's what empowers people to make life-changing choices. So they literally feel more safe, they feel more secure, they feel more empowered, and they literally make different choices that they find to be better for them. So that's the point.
Right. And that's so you're more focused on the management side. Wealth side, that's table stakes, right? The wealth
side. That's
right. You've
got to be great at that. You've got to be great at that.
Yeah. You're going to feel good, but you're never going to make any money. So, nobody's going to be
right.
there, right?
That's right. You have to be great at that.
Right.
That's right.
That's table stakes.
It's table stakes. I've never used those words. That's exactly right. It's table stakes. You've got to be great at that.
The other stuff is the personal human stuff.
That's right.
And then this is where it sounds like you guys are playing a different game than other people.
And we are. And, I've been to in industry meetings. I speak at some industry meetings. I'm speaking in the fall at one. And I say to people, I'm a behavior wealth manager. And I say the things we're going. And I've yet to meet a person who says, I do that
too.
Or, I know someone else who does it. Yeah.
So you're looking at this through different lens than most of the other people
That's
out
right.
there. So are you then, I'm assuming you're kind of a fee-based?
We are. We're a fee-based.
So that way we're on the same side.
But again, we're a different type of fee-based. So most of my competitors charge a percentage of the portfolio.
Right.
And we did that until very recently, but we have now moved to a annual fixed fee. Right. So our clients, it's not the same fee for everybody. Different clients have different fees, but our clients pay an annual fixed fee that does not go up or down as the portfolio goes up or down. And we think that annual fixed fee is much better aligned than the traditional asset management fee.
So then they're paying for a service.
They're paying for a service. And the problem with the traditional asset under management fee is your advisor has an incentive to tell you to spend less money. Because the less money you spend, the more money you save. And then once you're retired, the less money you spend, the less money you pull out right. of the portfolio. So you're giving your advisor a financial incentive to tell you to spend less. In our opinion, since you can't take the money with you, we want to encourage you to spend money in ways that will give you meaning and joy, as long as you don't spend so much that you put yourself at risk for running out of money before you run out of breath, because no one wants to do that. But it's a different mindset. So you want a fee system that's about more than just assets under management, that encompasses all of it. A fixed fee does that. And you want a fee system that encourages the client to live their life as fully as possible.
And the word join, the name join, is spelled J-O-Y-N. I'm sure that right. wasn't an accident.
It was not an accident. So it is because joy is a big part of a great life. And so joy, the noun, is where join comes from. It's also about joining our world. That we're
right,
looking
your tribe.
For people, our tribe. Exactly.
And then, so walk me through what a relationship looks like, because I would imagine the people who are your prospects, your clients, had a previous Do they mostly come from, they had an experience with somebody else, whether it's a brokerage firm or if it was a wealth advisor?
You know, maybe half. A lot of them come because they have some sort of big liquidity event. They're retiring and they're taking over their retirement account,
right,
or they sold their business or they inherited money. But so the question is, how do we
work? So how do you onboard somebody? Like, walk me through what an onboarding looks like and see you once a year?
It's this ongoing. So the way we onboard people is that as we bring them in, the first thing we do is we're going to work through our life priorities exercise.
So you give me some homework?
We're going to do it with you.
We're going to
do it with you because very few people do homework. So we're going to do it with you. And we're going to help the husband and the wife identify what are their top three life priorities.
So they come in together. That's important.
They come in together. We only work with husbands and wives.
So the whole family.
Right. That's right. Each person is a client. They are equal clients. Very important for that. So they come in together. We help them figure out their life priorities. We have them define what they mean by their life priorities to each other. And it's amazing how often couples who have been together 20 years learn something new about each other in their first 3 hours with us.
So it's hours? Amazing. This process is hours?
That first appointment's typically 2 to 3 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're really digging in there.
You're really digging in. That's right. You're really digging in.
So at the end of those 2 to 3 hours, am I getting a report, a roadmap, or what happens?
So we're going to then take the life priorities and we're going to then build a kind of sophisticated financial model for you. And we're then going to start thinking about the various financial questions, right? You know, can I retire at 65? Or I'd like to help my child in this way. Or I've always dreamed about taking this vacation. Or, you know, my church is really doing a big fundraiser to help kids in, somewhere.
Right.
And so can I afford to give money to them, et cetera? In that process, it's not unusual that people's fears come up. So we'll then interject some of our emotional-based tools to help people move from being fearful to being centered, right? But as this is all evolving now, because we have their priorities, we have the emotional tools so they're feeling centered, we have the wealth context, right? We're looking for ways to save on taxes. Out of all of that, we then start devising portfolios that are always designed to give people the highest rate of return for the level of risk they're willing to take, but more specifically are designed to help them live the life they want to live. So if we have somebody who says, you know, I'm a nervous person, right? And I'm about to retire and going from earned income to portfolio income scary, and that's scary for everybody, right? How can I have a portfolio that's going to help me feel better when the market goes down? So we will structure something that if the market goes down, they at least intellectually understand why they are okay. And we will engage them in some of our emotional tools like the alternate story or like illusion of control that will talk to their emotional brain to get that part of their brain calmed down.
Yeah, get it off the ledge.
Get it off the ledge. And so we go from these behavioral conversations to the wealth management conversation, to the investment conversation, and back and forth as we help people process whatever issue they're currently facing.
Now, do you find that when you do this exercise with most people, they realize that maybe they have enough now or sooner than they anticipated?
Yeah. So the vast majority of people realize that they have more options than they thought they had coming in. Mm-hmm. The vast majority. I was working with a client recently who was not happy at work, earning a lot of money, but not happy at work. And she said, if I quit, you know, what happens? And the truth is that if she quits, which this woman has quit, they're going to need to make some lifestyle adjustments downward. Right. Because they cannot afford to spend what they're currently spending if she quits. But she also gets some lifestyle adjustments upward. Right. If she quits, she gets to sleep 8 hours a night. If she quits, she gets to exercise every day. If she quits, you know, she has a lot less stress. Right. So she was having some physical symptoms from her stress. So the other part that we also help people realize is that you have more choices and every choice you have comes with benefits and costs.
And then the costs aren't necessarily monetary.
And the costs aren't necessarily monetary. And the benefits aren't necessarily monetary. Right. Both sides. Exactly.
It's more of a holistic kind of approach to your life rather than just your money.
It's a holistic approach to your life, and it's all based in science. Everything we do, we have a scientific study that says this works. This matters to people. This is how people think.
Now, okay, so I get this. I think I understand kind of this for an older person and a way to leverage this kind of a service to help me live a fuller life.
Right.
What about the younger person who is at the beginning of their journey and needs kind of to lean on some of these behavioral methods to nudge them maybe to get to save money and to have healthier financial habits early on so that they can?
So I think this is a very millennial friendly message. I have a 30-year-old child and a 28-year-old child, and I've been around them and I've been around their friends. This is a very millennial friendly message. Our firm, typically, you know, the kind of minimum annual fee we charge is about $11,000 a year. So if you're getting started and you're earning 30 grand,
it's going to be hard to write
that check. It's going to be hard to write that check. But I do have a book called Wealth and Happiness that people can go onto Amazon and buy. And we do have workshops that really anybody can come to about money messages and about flow experiences that people can come to. And we do have regular stuff we publish on the website that supports these various messages.
Mm-hmm. So the what would they be served by some of these kind of robo advisors where it's the set it and forget it kind of?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think that if you're getting started, robos can actually be a really good choice. I think the challenge that we don't know with robo yet, the challenge for everybody is when things go down, people get nervous. And when people get nervous, they move from stocks to cash at the exact moment they're not supposed to do it.
Right, the opposite.
Right. And the biggest value a investment advisor provides is he is the person that you speak to before you move the money to cash. Right. And if you have a good enough relationship and they spend enough time with you, in many cases, they can say, hold on for another day, week,
right.
month.
And then like magic.
And then over time, the market comes back and you end up being okay. We, you know, robo's only been around a short period of time. Robo's didn't really exist in 2008 and 2009. Right. We haven't had a really bear market since then. We'll see what happens.
Right. In a bull market, every system is a good one. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So now, how do you see your firm? It was important for you to have the firm rebrand to join advisors to really kind of be congruent with your messaging, I would think, in order to really go all in on this kind of methodology, this this behavioral wealth management methodology. So why was that important for you at this stage of your career to do that?
So this is how all of this started. The most difficult time of my life was 2003 and 2004 when I was separating and divorcing from my first wife. I always say my first wife's a great person. We were a terrible couple. I also say that we were in marriage therapy for 9 years. I tell people all the time, if you're in marriage therapy for 7 years and things aren't getting better, skip the last two. No need to do the last two. You can just move on. I went from marriage therapy to individual counseling. I am a avid reader. I started reading books about relationship. It took me to the positive psychology movement, which is about how to help people, psychology, how to help people live better lives. And I came across a study that said above us a relatively modest level of income. Today, the number of people cite 75,000 a year. Maybe it's 100,000 a year. Of a relatively modest, still a lot of money, but relatively modest. People don't get happier. And I felt like I had been punched. So I go to my brother and partner, we're the co-founders of the firm. And I say to him, Matt, you know we're helping people save for retirement. I know we're doing a great job of managing their money. I know we're helping protect their family if they die. But at the end of the day, because all of our clients earn more than $100,000 a year, at the end of the day, no one's getting any happier. No one's leading a better life. I think our job's pointless. And he said,
so this is like an existential.
So he says, I think pointless is a little strong. A little strong, David. But why don't you start thinking about it? And so that really started in 2004 or early 2005. That really started the process we have to think about behavioral wealth. And it became my passion. It is my purpose. And we were really ready to roll this out to the entire firm at the end of 2007. And then there was that little financial hiccup that many of us remember in 08, 09.
We had to pump the brakes here.
Pump the brakes. That's right. So we kind of pumped the brakes. We just tried to survive for the 2 years. We came back and we then said, this is all that we're doing. So that was probably the end of 2009. When we rebranded in 2000 in either 15 or 16, it was really time that we had been doing this now for essentially a decade.
Right. And then we know that it takes you 7 to 9 years to make kind of decisions of this magnitude, right?
Right. That's right. Big decision. That's right. That's right. And so that's why. But the other part here that's become clear to me is that our vision is we want to change the way America thinks about money. Mm-hmm. Because we think many Americans, maybe most Americans, have a dysfunctional relationship with money. And that dysfunction, like we've talked about already, causes suffering at the individual level. I care about doing things I love. I care about my family, yet I'm working 60 hours a week at a job I don't like. That'd be one example, right? Those people come home and share their suffering with their family. So the family suffers, which those people go out to the community, and the community suffers, and then the society suffers.
Right, and their kids think this is normal, so then they suffer.
And
their
legacy continues. It's going from generation to generation. So our vision is to start a positive process where we help change the way America thinks about money, and we help Americans understand that time, not money, is their scarce resource. And our mission then became: we want to do more than help people grow and protect their assets. It's critically important we do that, but we want to help people figure out how to make choices so they can use their wealth to build more meaningful and joyful lives. And a great life is at the intersection of meaning and joy.
Now, in your experience and having dealt with lots of people that have been successful monetarily, how many of your clients said, you know what? I'm all in. This sounds fantastic. Like, was this kind of a universal? Everybody's like, oh, look, I'm with you guys. Dave, this sounds perfect.
You know, I think 80% of the clients when we made the move said, this is great. I really like it. And then probably 20% who over the last decade have almost all left us. Uh-huh. But, you know, but there were probably 20% who said, you know, I'm not sure that this is really right for me.
And then, so you were willing to, that you, there was a repercussion to the action.
There was a repercussion to the action.
And that's part of the deal, right?
Right. That's right. I mean, to be candid, we have some clients who on the surface say they don't love it, but the discussions we have with them fill many of these things and they love those discussions. So I've learned I have to present it to different ways, different people, but we are who we are. We have a mission. We have a vision. We are a behavioral wealth management firm. We're the only behavioral wealth management firm. And so if people are with us who don't want behavioral wealth management and they want to leave, I get it.
Right.
It's
find
okay.
a better fit.
It's so okay. nothing That's personal. Right. It's nothing personal. Right. That's right.
Now, where do you see in human behavior generosity? Is generosity something that you think is inherent in everybody? Or do you think that that's something that can be taught? Or what's your take on generosity? Because Business Radio X, one of our core values, we say, is extreme generosity.
Okay, so I think that we are by nature geared to be generous. We are tribal animals. We are social animals, and so generosity builds binds. Or something called one of the behavioral things is called reciprocity. If someone does something nice for you, you feel an urge to do something nice back, and so that builds bonds. I think that in the world in which we live, we're often told not to be generous, right? Because if money is the metric of success, if money is the metric of how you're doing, if money is how you keep score, then giving money away feels a little crazy.
Right. Right? Why would I do that? Intellectually makes sense. That's right.
And so we find that when we get people to focus on what really matters, we get them away from that money-centric view of the world. Knowing money's important, it's a valuable tool, but it's still just a tool. It's not life, right? And gain to focus on times, their scarce resources, and things that really matter, they become more naturally generous. And when they become generous, two magic things happen. Magic thing number one, they feel good. Because it feels good to help someone else. Right. It feels good to be nice to other people. They get a personal boost out of it. Magic thing number two, they send themselves a message that they have enough.
Right.
Right. When you are generous, you're telling yourself you have enough. So one of my personal theories is when in doubt, be generous.
Right. Err on the side of generosity.
Err on the side of generosity. And so I love the fact that part of your mission is extreme generosity.
Right.
Ours I think that's terrific.
Serve first.
Serve first.
And you're going to get yours.
That's right.
Just bet on the universe.
That's right.
I'm believing in the universe.
Yes.
That's how it works.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, what is the pain they're having right now? What is their frustration? Because like we said earlier, everybody's in a bull market, so everybody thinks they're doing good.
Yeah, so I would say two things. The people who are most likely to come to us initially are in some sort of life transition. They're thinking about retirement. They just had someone's ill or someone's died. They're thinking of selling their business. They're getting divorced. There's some sort of life transition. And they say, I don't know what's next. I don't know how to figure it out. I feel overwhelmed. We are perfect for those people. But the second people are what I call the people who say, my life's okay. Right? It's okay. I live in a nice house. I'm doing okay. My job's not terrible. It's okay. Everything's okay, but nothing's great. You know these people because when you say to them, how are they often answer, I'm fine. I'm fine is American code for good, but not great. It's right. Okay. And for those people, because we are all have these tremendous resources that are not just our money, but our time and our talents and our wisdom and our network of relationships. So if you're thinking to yourself, you're fine. If you're thinking to yourself, you're okay, come talk to us because we can help you use your wealth to be more than fine, to be more than okay. We can help you use your wealth to build a truly remarkable life.
And a legacy that you're proud of.
And a legacy that you're proud of. So when you die and you're watching down from heaven, the priest or minister or rabbi will not say S&P, beat the S&P in top 2%, but they will say, look at the relationships they had with their children. Look at the incredible stuff that
And look
did.
At how many people are in this room here celebrating this person.
Look at how many people in this room celebrating this person because we all love this person because right. of who they were and what they did.
Right. Not how much
exactly
money
right.
they had.
Not how much money they had. Exactly.
And the website?
So the website's joinadvisors.com, and we're on Facebook, and we're on Twitter, and we're on LinkedIn.
And that's join, spelled the way it should be spelled, with the word joy in the middle of it, joinadvisors.com.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much, David, for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
All right.
Appreciate it.
This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.